wheat shot out of a cannon today, which made the slightly higher prices in corn look like a dud, and the lower close in beans look really tough. Pop-up showers from eastern Iowa into the eastern Corn Belt served as a reminder of some changes to the late week weather forecast. We'll cover that all in the news, because today we're talking cattle and hogs with today's guest.
Live from a day when cotton ate its Wheaties and wheat ginned up support via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we will talk with Lee Scholes from Iowa State University Extension. And right after the news, Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, that cotton market. Wow, a big move there. Wasn't limit up or anything like that, but it was still a nice, solid move to the upside. And when you look at that forecast for what is going on in the southwest part of the country for this weekend, wow. You know, we talked about it with Brad Rippey, USDA meteorologist, this morning. But some of those areas in West Texas are going to be 115 degrees, Davis. I don't know how. I don't know how a cotton crop will survive that. I don't know what that's going to do to the cow calf operators down there. They're going to be scrambling to get shade and plenty of water to all of their animals. Well, and you know what, they're already doing that. They're already scrambling to get all that done. We talked with Greg Henderson a week ago about it, that some of the tough conditions down in the southwest cow-calf country is starting to have an impact on attitudes there. Got this. It was sent to me by Scott Davis, Bullpen Trading. But
Hello, Scott. Yeah.
Yeah, Scotty. And it is a tweet from KWWL Stormtrack, which is right here in Waterloo, Iowa. Get this, with a current temp of 92 degrees in Waterloo, this is the seventh straight day with highs at or above 90 degrees. The last time we had such a run was back in 2012, July 30th.
Oh, here we go.
I'm sorry, June 30th through July 7th. Time before that happened in 1995. Okay. I'm not making any comparisons. I'm just, you know. Facts are facts, right, Davis?
Okay. I can't argue with facts. I am a handsome newsman after all.
That's right. That's right. But there are some chances for rain in the forecast. Let's get to it. What you got?
Chip, wheat futures sprinted to the upside, blowing through resistance at the June 16 high of 512 and a quarter, triggering additional short covering. Harvest is started in the Black Sea region and Europe, and the earliest yield reports are disappointing. That shot Paris wheat futures to five-week highs overnight, triggering the buying in the U.S. The talk of potential for export demand was amplified by a 450-point drop in the value of the U.S. dollar. September hard red winter wheat, 16 cents higher, baby, 452. September soft red up 21 and a quarter, 516 and a half. September spring wheat sprang 10 and one quarter cents to close, 523 and a quarter. Chip.
Yeah, dollar index is down to the lowest since it has been. I think it was early June, so that is helping this wheat market out.
All right. Yep. Ethanol production in the weekend of July 3 averaged 914,000 barrels per day, up 14,000 barrels from the previous week, and the 10th consecutive weekly increase. Ethanol stocks increased 456,000 barrels, but remain very manageable at 20.62 million barrels. The increase was from a three-and-a-half-year low in ethanol stocks. Increased chances for rain at the end of the week capped short covering activity in corn futures, but the market did manage a high range close for the first time in three sessions, indicating short covering activity chased prices to the upside late today. September corn futures 2¾ cents higher, 346 and a quarter. December corn firmed 1¾ cents, 354 and a quarter. March corn closed at 364 and a half, up a penny and a quarter today, Chip.
Yeah, we were higher, but the price action was disappointing because of what happened in wheat. The funds are in there defending that short position, because if we saw short covering in the market today with that light of gains, that's going to be really disappointing. Mm.
Well, those late week chances for rain weighed on soybean prices today, forcing November futures to the wrong side of $9. There was also word that Brazil is looking to export roughly 8 million metric tons of soybeans in July. That's down from the nearly 12 million tons exported in June, but is up from the previous estimates. Chip, simply put, Brazil's supply of export-ready soybeans is lasting deeper into the summer than many had expected.
Yep.
August soybean futures 4.25 cents lower, 8.92 and a half. September beans fell 5 3/4 to 8.90 3/4. Novi bean futures closed at 8.97 1/4, down 5 1/4 cents. Chip.
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing in there. That closed back under $9. But you got to set back, retest your breakout level, and then maybe go again. That could be what's going on with beans.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about cotton a little bit earlier. October cotton, 83 points higher, 64.57. December cotton shot 114 ticks higher to 64.16. Chip.
Like
trying
that.
Out some different cotton music
I
today,
like
huh?
That
what do you think?
Music, that's good. Yeah, it's all in the forecast with those hot temps.
On the livestock side, August live cattle futures 85 cents lower, 99.15. Deese cattle down 35, 106.67 1/2. August feeders off 87 1/2 cents, 134.05. And on the snout side, August hogs 92 1/2 cents lower, 47.95. Deese hogs up a dime, 51.30. Chip.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, Bubba?
Buy him, baby. Buy him. We're going. We're going.
All right. So set back in beans, a buying opportunity is what you're saying.
Beans and corn. I mean, today's corn volume was the lowest in 2 weeks. There was no short covering today. They'll be back. They're going to get a stock. They're going to get it rammed home once again. And I mean, wheat broke out today. Buy them all. That's my words. As we call the bottom right here on your show, they're going higher.
I love it. I love it.
Right or wrong? I told you to mark the tape. I think it was June 11th.
Yep. Yeah, I think it was something like
actually,
that.
It might have been better. I told you to mark the tape. Look, we're going higher. The shorts were taking a break. They were too busy chasing down their wheat today. Okay, but now wheat is broken out as well. And the markets want to go higher. I mean, you know, we can keep hoping and the funds can keep pushing, but you know what's going to happen. They'll be crying later. So we'll sing a sad song. Okay. We'll get Davis to sing for them.
Good idea. What's keeping the funds on the short side of corn? Why weren't they covering shorts today?
Well, I mean, they did a pretty good job covering last week, right? I mean, you know, we had a move that was, you know, what did we move? We moved in 3 days, moved 40 cents, I mean, 9%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty good size move. I think, look, at the end, I think they're trying one more push down. And basically, 350 is showing December corn to be pretty solid support. And I think you're going to see them start to go up. We held today and haven't closed below 350 since the first breakout above it. And I think this is just a sign and just another buying opportunity for everybody.
All right. Good stuff. Did you have a good 4th of July? A little quiet?
Yeah. Listen, fixed the roof. You know, did all the stuff I never do. You know, I had to go to work.
Yeah, you be careful being up there on that roof on hot summer days there, buddy.
Bubba was my best friend. Cotton's
going higher, too. All right.
Love it. Thanks, Todd. We'll talk to you later. That's Todd Bubba Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. When we get back here, we're going to be talking cattle and hog trade and fundamentals with Lee Scholes from Iowa State.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Hey, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
I'm here.
Wheat sharply higher today. Winter wheat contracts, even the spring wheat contract posted double-digit gains. Corn slightly higher, soybean slightly lower. Soybean meal and bean oil both work to the downside. Cotton sharply higher there. I knew you wanted to be able to do that.
I'm so pleased with the new music. I like it much better than the one before.
I like it. I do like it. Yeah. cattle traded lower. Lean hogs were actually mixed today. Class 3 milk futures, get this, the July contract up another 30 cents, $23.74. The August contract up 2 cents at $21.52. Man, don't forget what we've been talking about with every time we have somebody on talk about dairy marketing. When we're in this price range, they're saying just find a way to buy your catastrophic protection in the cheapest puts that you can find. But in this case, you ought to be able to get close to $16 on that and make it work. So for a strike price. Okay, yeah. Let's bring in Lee Scholes, Iowa State University. How you doing, Lee? It's good to talk with you again.
It's great to be on. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. Last fall when I was down there on campus was the last time we talked.
Well, it seems even longer given what we've experienced here the last couple months.
You got that right. You got that right, no doubt. So we're going to go for a half-full stadium for football season, huh?
I think that's the hope. Seats are sold out half-full, so there's a lot of optimism, I guess, a lot of interest.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's all obviously because of COVID, and we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about the influence of the pandemic and the economic shutdown and everything that has impacted the meat markets, the cattle markets, the hog market. And when I was sharing thoughts with Lee earlier this morning, I said, you know, disruptions may be the theme of the day or the theme of the conversation, because we got to start with the disruptions to the demand side of things, Lee. When we're looking at both pork and beef, you know, A, how much was lost? Where was it lost? Is it permanently lost? Could it come back eventually? All some huge question marks for both beef and pork, right?
Those are the million-dollar questions, and some of them, quite honestly, we don't have the answers to. I think we know early on in the pandemic, we did see a dramatic shift in purchasing behavior. When you look at food purchases, roughly 50% are food in home and 50% are food away from home. And we concentrated all of that on food in home. We know that there was a lot of stocking up behavior. So that actually helped demand short term there in March. But then with those larger stocks that consumers had, I think we're seeing that play out here over these last several months. Demand, realizing that's a difficult measure because it's both what they're buying from a volume standpoint, but also a value standpoint. And we know that this pandemic has impacted economies worldwide. So it's both domestic demand and export demand.
Right. Yeah. And that export demand was something on the hog side of things or the pork side of things that 2020, it was going to be the thing that was really going to help this hog market get up there and kind of thrive for a year, wasn't it?
It was, really. I mean, yeah. It was tremendous to look at. We were going to have increased production and higher prices. You only get that with stronger demand. Even through May, exports still are up 30% by volume, 37% by value, and that includes down 12% here when we looked at May. So it still shows that from an annual standpoint, exports are going to be strong for pork, but not as strong as I think many of us expected, and we're seeing that play out in prices now.
Yeah, yeah. And then all the uncertainty with the relationship with China has got to be adding to the uncertainty of pork exports going forward as well. And it makes it that much harder to price anything into futures and how you make sense of what's going on in this cash market right now. I don't know how anybody does it.
That's certainly the case. I mean, I think, you know, with China, it's the phase one deal. I certainly, you know, that's been the attention. But I think what's forgotten is they have a tremendous deficit of pork, given the African swine fever situation there. That hasn't changed much. But, you know, I think potentially consumer demand has changed some in China. And, you know, that we had a difficult time getting a handle on that before this situation. This is even worse now. And I think that's what's being reflected kind of with this uncertainty in demand and, you know, impacts on prices.
Yeah. You know, when we started talking about exports here, I went straight to China. And, we can't forget that we had other trade agreements that were being signed in early 2020 that were adding to the optimism for pork and for beef, right?
Certainly. Well, and, you know, the word unprecedented has been thrown around a lot with COVID, but really unprecedented from the standpoint of the trade agreements that yeah. we've gotten in place here in the last year, right? I mean, that's tremendous and got overshadowed here. USMCA started last week officially, and you know, that wasn't the major buzz, but should be. I mean, from a standpoint of those trade agreements are still there and should impact markets, but realizing that they're much longer term impacts, it's not going to be day one of those agreements.
Right, right. And that deal with Japan, is it working out like we anticipated it would for beef?
Well, difficult to parse that out in the current environment. If you look at May exports, for example, really Hong Kong and China were the only ones up for beef exports. But okay. yes, certainly that's putting us on equal playing field for our highest valued market. So one, we're not going to lose market share as our competitors step in, but also gives us that opportunity to increase that market share for that high valued market.
Right, right. Okay. So with everything that's going on, let's focus specifically on cattle right now, because I want to go to the cow-calf herd here, Lee. With everything that we don't know about this industry going forward, we also know that we're in year one of a drought down in the Southwest. It just feels to me like this is going to be encouraging some cow liquidation. Agree?
Agreed. And that's already starting to bear out in the data. Okay. And remember, we still have constrained capacity. But when you look out west, which is how USDA measures it, California, Arizona, Nevada, you're seeing massive year-over-year increases in beef cow slaughter. Actually, for the week ending June 20th, it was up 110%. Similarly, when you look in for Texas region, you know, we're up 20 to 25% year-over-year. And so that's exactly aligning with what we're seeing in the drought monitor.
Yeah, yeah. So what does that do to our calf supply for next spring and next fall? I mean, we're going to be looking at a tightening feeder cattle supply, right?
Certainly, and much quicker than anticipated. I think we were expecting to be really at that peak of the cattle cycle, and forthcoming we would see marginally smaller calf crops. But this looks like it's certainly going to escalate that. Now, I will caution that I think, you know, we'll see some regions where actually we have more beef cows than year ago, or we don't see the major declines. Eastern Corn Belt, for example, where weather conditions have allowed and we've seen constrained processing capacity, producers might hold on to a few more cows. But certainly in aggregate, I think this is going to contribute to tighter feeder cattle supplies going forward.
Yeah, boy, it seems like there's good grass up in Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota this year. So that they could be holding on to some cows up there too. Yeah, interesting in trying to figure out exactly where this is going to take us. So what is your overall attitude towards the beef market going forward, cattle market going forward, Lee?
Well, I think you have to have optimism if you're in the camp that we're at the bottom, right? And I think we're trying to find that bottom, and hopefully, you know, we go forward, understanding that I think it's really going to be predicated on working through this backlog of cattle. If you look since early April, you know, we've slaughtered roughly 1.2 million less steers and heifers. And so that is a good number to kind of give us that backlog of that level. And so until we work through that backlog, that's going to continue to pressure prices. The quicker we can do that, I think the better that is for calf prices this fall and feeder cattle prices as we get into the spring. And so, you know, I think that maybe provides a bit of optimism that processing capacity is rebounding. And that we are working through that backlog of cattle, but it's going to take several months, and the sooner the better.
I was going to say, that sounds to me like it could take until the end of the year at least.
I think that's easily, you know, doable, and in reality, I mean, just given kind of what it's going to take going forward and understanding, you know, we're not stopping these supply chains either.
Okay, we're going to do that for hogs next. Some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. French soft wheat exports to drop sharply from 2019-20 records. Ukraine exported an impressive amount of wheat and corn in 2019-20. Customs data indicates Ukraine exported 20.5 million metric tons of wheat and 30.3 million metric tons of corn in the marketing year ended June 30th. China is increasingly critical of the dollar's monopoly. China's criticism of the U.S. dollar's monopoly is gaining momentum in the face of Washington's multi-trillion dollar coronavirus stimulus. The WHO conceded that airborne transmission of the coronavirus cannot be ruled out. Really? And the U.S. has notified the U.N. of withdrawal from the World Health Organization. Check out all that ProFarmer has to offer by going to TryProFarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. We're talking to Lee Scholz from Iowa State University. Before we get back to Lee, Davis, go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Chip, September hard red winter wheat 16 cents higher, 452. September soft red jumped 21 and a quarter to 516 and a half. September corn futures were 2¾ higher, 346 and one quarter. December corn firmed 1¾ cents to 354 and a quarter. August soybean futures 4¼ cents lower, 892 and a half. November bean futures closed at 897 and a quarter. That's down 5¼ cents. October cotton 83 points higher, 64.57. August live cattle futures were 85 cents lower at 99.15. August feeders off 87 and a half cents, 134.05. And August hogs were 92 and a half cents lower, 47.95. That's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right, Davis, thank you. Lee Scholz, Iowa State University. Let's see, what is Lee is, he's a professor of economics, of ag economics down there, and his specialty is ag and natural resource economics. Did I get that right, Lee?
Yep, that's the catch-all for us ag economists.
yep, excellent. Okay, we talked about that coming supply of cattle into 2021. Now, obviously, on the hog side of things, we're looking at a shorter period, but there's just as much uncertainty on what that supply of hogs is going to be going forward, isn't there?
There is. We did get, you know, I think a peek into that a little bit here when we looked at the hog and pigs report and those inventory estimates. But I think we got to remember that it's not normal conditions, right? We know we've slowed down diets of hogs. We know we've adjusted stocking densities. And so really penciling out kind of those market timings are much more difficult given the situation that we have.
But even with those heavier weight hogs, market hog inventory, I think they were up 12-13%. When we've got a market hog inventory that is that much bigger than what it was a year ago, even if we've got 100% of our processing capacity back, Lee, we can't get caught up, can we?
Not anytime soon. We're not at full operational capacity.
Right.
You know, a lot of the estimates put us at 90 to 95% of capacity. Now we have lower slaughter levels seasonally here, so that's helping. But this backlog that's developed over the last couple of months really says, you know, we've slaughtered roughly 1.9 million fewer hogs here since early April, and so that kind of gives you a little bit of a benchmark of what that backlog is.
Yeah, and trying to hold a fat hog back is not like trying to hold a fat cattle back. It doesn't work the same. Eventually, you've got to do something with those hogs.
Yep, and we've seen, I mean, I think it's been a tremendous job by producers, their team of experts, really everyone throughout the supply chain to mitigate kind of the worst case scenario. And I think, you know, for the most part, that's made rather modest kind of worst case scenario decisions happen on the farm. Now, we're not out of the woods yet. Again, we have a major backlog. We're having summer heat, and this backlog is going to continue. And very much we need continued operational capacity.
Right, right. Are the weights telling us anything on the hogs right now? I should have asked you about that on cattle too, but let's start with hogs.
Well, I think there's two ways to look at this. Weights have come down about 12 pounds as we look at the Iowa region here since they peaked at 295 in that first week in May. But we still are running 2 to 3 pounds heavier than we were this time last year. And actually, last couple of weeks, that year-over-year increase or year-over-year difference has increased. And so I think that suggests that, you know, we're still kind of peaking at that backlog here and not necessarily working through that all that much.
Okay. And on the cattle side of things, what are the weights telling you there?
So weights there are about 35 pounds heavier than they were a year ago. That is market improvement over the last several weeks. But I think we got to remember in cattle, you know, I think the dispersion is a lot greater. When, you know, I've seen examples in the Iowa auction report of 220-pound steers. Or 2,200 pound steers. It's even hard to say, right?
Yes, 2,200 pound steers. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think when we look at those weights, I mean, there's going to be some really heavy cattle out there. And, you know, as you talked earlier in this show, we got some hot weather coming. And so very important to monitor those cattle.
Absolutely. 2,200 pound steers with the weather that we're having right now. You better be prepared to drag some deads out because it's the weather stress is going to be pretty significant in here. Okay, back to hogs and sows and farrowing intentions. We talked about the beef cow slaughter. Are we seeing anything in the sow slaughter numbers that would indicate we're going to be looking at a smaller breeding herd going forward?
Well, we did decrease about 50,000 sows from March 1 to June 1. You know, really over the last 3 months, you've seen from a percentage standpoint, sow slaughter double. It was about 8% for the first 3 months of the year. It's about 16% now. But I would say that I don't see us declining that breeding herd all that much. We got to remember that farrowing intentions, they were lower, 4.6% lower than year ago levels for that June-August quarter. But USDA has time and time again revised those up from the second intention to the third intention. So, you know, if I was a betting man, I think we're going to farrow more sows in June-August than those intention numbers say. That's the case. You know, we're going to need that breeding herd not to change all that much. And so, you know, I think we're not going to see, you know, tremendous decline in that breeding herd.
Okay. So you're overall attitude toward hog prices, let's just stick with through the second half of this year for right now.
Well, certainly 2020 is going to stand out as one of the worst years that we've seen in a long time. And especially when we look at seasonally, you know, when I look at my forecast for the third quarter here, it's $50, you know, per hundredweight for a summer price, you know, that's dramatic decline from what we've seen. And so, you know, I think when you look at the futures market, that there's a bit of optimism as we get further out, especially into 2021. So if that's some demand pull, if that's further adjustments in supply, you know, from that standpoint, I think there is a bit of optimism if we're looking for something.
Okay. Have you thought about 2021 hog prices?
So there, you know, I think 2021 could look a lot like 2019, at least as what futures prices have suggested, maybe a little bit lower. But, you know, kind of a rebound, we're going to probably lose about 18% or $12 per hundredweight on an annual basis for 2020, and we could gain back, you know, $10 to $11 of that in 2021. And so, again, hopefully 2020 is a bit of an outlier, but there's a lot of supply dynamics, and we haven't even talked about demand dynamics that may yeah. dictate what these prices are.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's one cut of a beef carcass or a hog carcass that needs that restaurant and food service to come back, it's pork bellies, man. Let's get the bacon demand rolling again, huh?
Certainly. And I think that's what you're seeing. It's high-end steaks and it's processed pork, right? And bacon being at the top of that list. That's what's lost value and what we see an increase in cold storage. And we just see consumers, they love to spend money on high-end items at food service.
Right, right. Yeah, and now with some of the states that have tried to reopen, pulling back, it makes me pause when I think about what demand is going to look like in the second half of the year. We've got some challenges ahead of us. Okay, now you are a professor, a teaching professor at Iowa State in Ag Economics. So when you think about the future, how will the COVID quarter that we just went through, how will that COVID quarter be discussed in ag economic classes in the future?
Well, if I'm an editor of a book, I think I'm scrambling right now to write a chapter on COVID-19, right? Because it's not going to follow some of the historical relationships that we've seen. I think economics explain a lot of what we've seen during these very turbulent times. But again, you can't pair that up with what we've seen historically for data that we typically use.
Right. Go to that cattle and that hog, or cattle in the beef market. The divergence that we saw there is a real classic example of how COVID quarter was just weird.
And it's economics at play. We've seen a tremendous reduction in processing capacity. Some days and weeks down over 40%, and that reduces the demand for animals. And what certainly contributed to the pressure in prices that we've seen and is still playing out today. And on the flip side, you really seen that. Temporary constraint in supply of meat, and that's what shot up wholesale prices to record levels. Now, those prices have come back down into what we've typically seen this year and year ago levels, but for a very short time period, a tremendous divergence. And yep. You know, it's difficult to explain when you're just yeah. seeing those, but you know, it's.
Yep.
Again, economics can kind of explain a lot of those relationships.
Exactly. Lee, we've got to go. This was a lot of fun. I waited too long. I'll get you on again soon. Thanks. It's Lee Schultz from Iowa State.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize the National Corn Growers Association for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Speaking of ACAM, Davis.
Yes.
Of course, that is a sponsor of the Farmer Forum, of which we had this morning with Randy mm-hmm. Ermacher from Nebraska and Don Lamb yes. from Indiana. In the final segment, boy, they made an outstanding point. I think Don started it, but Randy added on in the idea that with all the chaos that's happening nationally, on the political scene, don't mm-hmm. take your eye off the local scene. Stay focused Ooh. There. Make sure that yep. that the chaos isn't seeping in to your county government, isn't seeping into your city, your town government. And mm-hmm. I thought that was rock solid. That was a nice conversation that we had with them this morning. Which, by the way,
well, maybe parents, drill that right down to your local school board too, especially if you've got kids in
yes.
school, maybe grandkids
yes.
in school.
That would be a big one
right now.
That is the topic of discussion in D.C. today. You've got President yep. Trump sending the message that he wants schools to reopen this year, this fall. We need to get them reopened mm-hmm. for several reasons. not at the bottom of President Trump's list here, Davis, I will bet, is to get those kids out of the house so that the parents can go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm sure that that is not at the bottom of his list. But there are plenty of other reasons in there too. So this class and the chapter of the book that Lee was talking about that somebody should be scrambling to write right now. I started trying to chart during the break. I was trying to draw graphs of what the beef demand and beef price action versus the cattle price action looks like. And, you know, it is simple 101 stuff. I mean, it's price on one axis, demand on the other, and you've got to throw the supply element in there. Okay? It's kind of crazy that as our supply of cattle increased, our price was under pressure. Is that all that crazy? And as our supply of beef contracted, our beef price went up. Is that all that crazy? The craziest thing through all of that was that we maintained as much domestic demand for beef as we did.
That's one
of the things that maybe. Now, here's another thing that we need to throw into the mix on there. Everybody got a check for $1,200. Well, not everybody, but most people got a check for $1,200.
Yeah.
And if you were pulling unemployment, you were getting a bonus.
Yep.
All of this has played a role in that divergence between beef price and cattle price that Lee was talking about. Talk about a chapter in a book. I wonder if it's a 100, 200, 300, 400, or a grad level class, dude.
Boy, I don't know because... I don't know that given the same circumstances that the same things would happen again. I mean, I could see it as this is what happened. These were the significant contributing factors. This is it. Is this something that you're going to need to have in your back pocket in the future as well? If this happens and that happens and that happens, well, then here's how I market effectively through that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. If you
it's chaotic. It's like chaos theory. How do you market amid chaos?
Right. In this case, because a risk to human health in the form of a virus that can be easily transferred from one to another, threatening a workforce. The biggest lesson here, is if something like this pops up again. And your cattle are close to ready to go, they go. If your hogs are close, they go. Yeah. You get them gone. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out.
I think
out.
You need to sharpen your pencil, Chip. I think you've got some ideas there.
I think I might have to. Yeah. That's an interesting thought. That area down there in West Texas that I was talking about, when you look at it on the 6 to 10 day forecast for July 14th through the 18th, 80% odds of above normal temperatures in the panhandle.
Wow.
Yeah. That's above normal of West Texas.
Right. Which is like a thimble, right? Is normal.
Yeah.
Thimbleful.
It's going to be hot. Hot. Those above normal temperatures are across most of the Corn Belt, South Dakota. The above normal temperatures are even expected in Southeast South Dakota. You've got a very narrow band where normal temperatures are expected, and then you get into below normal temperatures in Western South Dakota and most of North Dakota. On the precip side, the above normal precip has been up in the Dakotas. Well, it's sinking to the south now. Down into Southeast South Dakota, even northern Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, even northern Illinois is in the above normal precip areas now. below normal precip still expected through southern Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, southern Iowa, most of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. So hot and dry for the most part in that 6 to 10 day outlook. Jumping out to the 8 to 14 day, this is for July 16th through the 22nd, above normal temperatures across the entire Corn Belt. The entire thing, including the Dakotas. But at least we've got some chances for above normal rains through the Dakotas, Minnesota, Northeast Iowa, Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, Michigan, and into Ohio for July 16th through the 22nd. We're still looking at very dry conditions through Nebraska, Kansas, Southwest Iowa, Missouri, of course, Oklahoma and Texas. So tough time down in the Southwest. Hey, for Davis, for Joe Stackler, and for me, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, Michael Gunderson from MetLife. And tomorrow afternoon, we'll get you ready for the supply and demand reports. We got Jerry Goodell from Midland Research right here on AgriTalk.